Hello, I'm Felicia Vereen, always known as Fee.
Hey, Fee, and I'm your girl, Sharita Three, better known as Fred.
And we are Inspire Her, the Total Woman podcast, all about uplifting you.
Yes.
Because friends, face it, you are awesome.
We'll be chatting up about topics we love to talk about, all the things we as women must juggle every day, and the ish we complain about.
But who's listening?
Girl,
we'll
nobody.
Chat about the struggle, the job, and about him. Mm. You know who we're talking about.
Girl.
That boo, husband, boyfriend, ex, whatever you calling them today.
Mm.
Our lovely hellions, kids.
Our angels. But seriously, friends, life happens, and we don't always get a chance to talk about it. We take it on the chin, and we keep it moving.
Because that's what we were told to do.
Yep.
But here on Inspire Her, the Total Woman podcast with Red and Fee, we are the friends you love to hang out with.
We are here to inspire her,
the Total Woman.
Yeah. Hey, hey. What's going on, Red?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. And where are you? Because that don't look like home.
Well, I am in Vegas, came out here for the Super Bowl, but we leave in the morning, so I'll be headed back to the East Coast in the morning. Crazy out here. I mean, so many people.
Well, was that your Valentine's Day present?
No, I think it was just more like a little family trip, came out here for the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So no.
Well, all right. Look, guys, we're going to get to this because I'm excited. I am super, super excited. But one thing that I do want to do is to share. I want to share to our John F. Kennedy page, and I'm going to tell y'all why. And y'all see me. I got my John F. Kennedy shirt on, and I'm going to tell y'all why I have that on as well. But right now, give me a minute. I want to share. Or Sharita, can you share us to the John F. Kennedy page just in case people don't know? Well, listen.
Mm-hmm.
We all know. We'll get it to you. But it's Black History Month, as we all know. And yeah, it's Black History for me all month long and every month out of all 12 months, every month of the year. But we're going to play along with it. But right now, we always talk about Black history. We talk about the people in Black history, and we talk about food sometimes. But a lot of times you don't talk about, you know, music, what gets us going. So I said, you know, let's talk about three different things. So we have a series going on. We're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about dance. And we're going to talk about our last episode of the month is going to be about iconic women in Black history. So today we're going to start with music. And we invited, listen, what? How many things has he been to us? Some of us, he's been a dad, a teacher, a band director, a friend, all kinds of things he's been.
Track
to.
Coach.
Track coach.
Yes.
I know about that one.
So because I used to make y'all run all them laps.
Oh, that's he sure did. This is Mr. McGee, our band director, all those other things. And yes, he was our track coach because we were in a marching band. And he made us run laps, y'all, before practice. So we ran laps, then we marched, and then we was tired as I don't know what when we finished. So
and y'all stayed out of trouble.
We were.
That's right. And we had to run those laps. Danced hard, y'all. We danced hard. So,
yes.
Hey, welcome.
Hey, thank you all for having me. I really appreciate that. You know, you're two of my favorites. And no, Peg is not my very favorite.
You're Peggy both. Lou is the favorite.
No,
happy
not.
Birthday, Peggy.
Peggy Lou, happy birthday, Lou.
Okay, happy yeah. Birthday, girl. So but yeah, we chose you a favorite, but it's okay.
I love all y'all.
And we know. So tell us about Mr. McGee.
Okay. Legend. Well, so since you're over 21, you can call me Dollar Bill now, because that's what all the hip hop folk called me, AD and
Bill. Okay.
And Donnie and Lonnie B and all of them. They all call me Dollar Bill, so you can skip the Mr. McGee stuff and call me Dollar Bill, whatever. That comes from my little hip hop days producing some of your fellow cougars and everything else. But bottom line is, I was born in Richmond, my mother and father were living in New York at the time, but they came here because my grandmother was here. But my family lived in Petersburg, and Petersburg did not have a hospital for Black folk. So when I was born, if you were going to be born in a hospital, you had to come to Richmond. So I always like to tell people I was born in Richmond. That gives me some, you know, some bona fides here in Richmond. They go, like, oh, you were born here in Richmond, right? But I really grew up in Petersburg. Well, I grew up in New York, and then my mother and father divorced, and we came to Petersburg. And from Petersburg, we moved to Missouri because my mother had gotten her master's and got a job teaching at Lincoln University. Oh, and wow. And then from Lincoln, we moved to Atlanta. Now, we're talking about Black history, so here's the deal. My mom, I remember when she would send us to Petersburg for the summers while she was working on her master's. And so that last summer, she came to us and said, y'all, we're moving. And my sister and I said, moving? We just moved to Missouri. She said, we're moving to Atlanta. My sister and I said, we ain't moving to Atlanta. They got the Ku Klux Klan down there. Mm-hmm. We're 10, 11 years old. We're going like, no, we're not moving to no Atlanta. And she said, look, y'all my kids, where I go, y'all go. We moving to Atlanta, and that's it. And so we moved to Atlanta in 1963. Almost the day we got to Atlanta, we rode downtown, and on one side of the street was the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Dr. King and everybody marching, right, to integrate a store. And on the other side of the street was the Ku Klux Klan in their robes and everything. We got down in the car and screamed, we told y'all the Ku Klux Klan was down here. I mean, we were like, 1963 in Atlanta was like crazy. It was like the beginning, wow. The real start of the civil rights movement down that way. And that's when we got dropped right on Morris Brown's campus. My mother took a job teaching at Morris Brown. And there's a very interesting story about that. I'm going to jump to that. Kanye West's mother also went to Virginia Union. My mom went to Union, but she didn't graduate. She graduated from Virginia State. But Kanye West's mother went to Union and then took a job teaching at Morris Brown. My mother went to Union and took a job teaching Morris Brown and married a dude named West, who we say is Kanye's cousin. So that's kind of like crazy, right? That synergy. But so I move on. So I got in the band there in Atlanta the seventh grade year, and I went to school with Martin Luther King's kids, Yolanda and Martin the third, the oldest boy. All of us went to same elementary school together. So I used to see Mrs. King or Dr. King every day almost. And then we also attended Dr. King's church, Ebenezer, whenever he was in town, because, you know, at the time he was in Montgomery. But when he would come home to preach, you know, everybody would go to Ebenezer to hear Dr. King. So I joke with people right now. I said, well, I probably shook Dr. King's hand, because, you know, Baptist churches, they would always go out to the front, and when you come out, they shake your hand after the benediction. I said, I probably shook Martin Luther King's hand, but I sure didn't hear him preach, because I was 11 years old, and you know how 11-year-old, we sleeping up in there. We doing something. We didn't have no devices at the time. We didn't have none of that other stuff. So I was up in there asleep probably listening to Martin Luther King. Isn't that crazy? When you think back on your exposure and your history. We lived six blocks from Dr. King, and I actually went to the same high school. You all have visited my high school. When we went to Atlanta that time, we took you all by my high school. And my high school is the same high school Dr. King went to. So my little history right there. And then my band director went to Florida A&M. He also graduated from the high school. So he went to Florida A&M, and he bought back that Florida A&M marching style, right? So it's like, y'all, all that stuff I passed down to you all was bought because I was immersed in that type of music growing up. Right. And so from there, from Atlanta, I went to Morris Brown College for 3 years, and we had a serious band at the time. So we ended up at the Macy's Parade. We ended up at the Rose Bowl Parade. We traveled all over the, like Jackson State and them are doing now. We were traveling all over the country. But Atlanta was a little too much for me. So meaning there were too many opportunities to do things that you shouldn't do. Because when I grew up in Atlanta, it was the Vietnam era. And a lot of hippies had moved to Atlanta to dodge the draft. So they had a big old hippie culture in Atlanta, almost like Greenwich Village. And the hippies, for all you all who are younger than know, what happened, hippies grew their beards long and their hairs long so they couldn't be detected. So they didn't look like what they did in high school because most of them were trying to avoid the draft. At the time, Vietnam was going on and all of us were subject to the draft at the time. So if you refuse to fight in a war, you would like leave town, change the way you look, and hope to God the army never caught up with you. So in Atlanta, we had a big hippie culture for probably the biggest one in the South. And because of that, they brought a lot of drugs and other stuff to Atlanta, you know, at the time. And me being 17, 18, 19 years old, I got caught up. So by the time I was 21, God spoke to me and said, you need to get out of here. He said, because if you stay here, I don't know. I can't promise you you'll make it, you know. And so I called my grandmother up in Virginia and I said, look, I want to finish school. I want to go back to school. Can I come live with you? And so in January of 73, I came and enrolled at Virginia State University. And I started over from scratch. I was supposed to graduate in June of 73, and I started over with 0 credits in January of
73.
Dang. Oh, wow. Yeah. Right? Yeah. It took me 9 years to finish college. But like my daddy, one of the wisest things my daddy ever said to me, he said, they don't ask you when you finish, they ask you if you finish. And I thought about that, and I said, you're right. They want to know if you finish. They don't care when you finish. And that's what I encourage all my friends and some of your, I'm on a lot of you are fellow Cougar students. And I won't name Sean, and I won't name other people like Sean, and I won't name them, but I'm really on them about going ahead and finishing college. I give Juju credit for it. Juju, you know, did the Norfolk State thing, but he came back here and he went ahead and finished college and got his degree from Full Sail. So I encourage all of my other and all of your other classmates to do that. So when I came here, I worked in music at Virginia State. I couldn't march in the band because I was too old as far as I was concerned. So I started writing music for the band at Virginia State. And because I had been in the music business, I was always writing the kind of music that the students wanted to hear. So I was writing the Parliament, Funkadelic, the Earth, Wind & Fire, and all the other stuff, right? And that's what I ended up bringing to you all when I came to Kennedy. You know what I'm saying? I bought my ability to write music so that it would appeal to young people. Because I'd been one of them young people up there running around trying to be a little rock star, whatever I was doing in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So pretty much that's my background. I've been doing that for, I don't want to say this, but I've been in the music business for 54 years. Recorded my first record maybe 54 years ago. Yeah.
And we experienced a small portion of that by being in the band. And right. We were, you know, people loved to see our band when we came on because they knew we was going to break it on down. I mean, they loved it. We had a very small band, but we did some things. I remember walking in the parades. I remember just being so proud, you know, to be in John F. Kennedy's band. And you brought us stuff that we didn't, you know, like you said, you kept us out of trouble. I was in the military and I was in the band. I was a flag girl.
You were too busy to get in trouble.
I was too busy to get in trouble. You know, we kept our heads straight because we knew, well, some of us, we knew if we got in trouble, we weren't going to be able to be in the band.
There was some accountability. That's true.
Right. Yeah, I got kicked out almost every week of the band. Peg, he'll tell you that.
Well, the real...
But my mouth.
Well, that's because I love you too. But the real deal is, let me tell y'all this little quick story, because it's a very personal story to me. Nat Lee, who was at Armstrong the year before I got to Kennedy, right after you all broke up AK, all right, Mr. Lawson hired Nat Lee to come in. Nat Lee was a Virginia State graduate, had been in the music business a lot like myself. We were all good friends because we had played, AD's daddy had played in the band with Nat Lee. We funeralized Nat Lee on Saturday. That's the reason I say it's real touching. Mr. Lee came to Armstrong in 86, and they came down to the Petersburg High School, the Virginia State University homecoming parade in 86. They didn't have uniforms. It's almost just like when I first, mm-hmm. we had no uniform. They had on the sweatshirts and the blue jeans, and they were getting funky. I mean, they were getting down. Nat Lee had, he and I were both out of the same school of music. So Armstrong actually kicked it off first. So then the very next year, I'd been still touring in the music business. Actually, I came off the road being tour manager for Climax, the all-girls group. I was their tour manager in August. I had just come back.
I don't know about you.
I love Climax. I didn't know that.
I had just come back from Japan. And Mr. Lawson called my grandmother up and said he had a job for me. And then I was telling her, well, like, I haven't applied for a job in Richmond. So she said, boy, I know what I'm talking about. The man calls, say he got a job for you. So it was at Kennedy because Mr. Ricks had gotten killed in a car accident and they needed a band director. And then I found that I remembered that Nat Lee was up there. So I said, oh yeah, we can do this. So Nat and I were the only two band directors that had funky bands at the time. Everybody else was doing core style. But when I came up there with you all and they were talking about core style, I'm going, Precious and them were talking about, I said, I don't do no core style. What is that y'all talking about? Y'all got to learn how to dance up in this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Because I had that Virginia State, FAMU, all of my background was with show band. And so for that reason, I told you all earlier, God orders your steps, because inner city kids like you all who came to these inner city high schools, you all needed, Peggy says she knew I was in.
Look at your favorite.
I know that's my Lou. You all needed two things. You needed structure, and you needed somebody who related to what you like, music, which is the same thing that I, as a young person, never forgot. That down south, by me going to school in the south, we got down. We didn't know nothing about no core style. It was all about, but there was a lot of discipline involved. Remember, my band director went to FAMU. And that's the one thing that you'll know about Florida A&M. They've always been a very disciplined organization.
Yes.
You know? So I brought that same discipline to John F. Kennedy. You know, and I remember telling Kennedy, remember, I don't know if y'all remember this, the drummers tried to do a little, Kenny and Marlon and Poo Poo and them, tried to do a little revolt against me, and I fired all of them. I said, "Turn in your uniform." They wouldn't stop playing when I told them to stop playing.
Like, oh, they would kick us out in a minute.
Oh man, I told them suckers to turn it
out. I paid attention.
Well, that's because you were in the military. You were in the military too. You were in the military. You had Colonel Vessels, and you had Sergeant Chapman and Colonel Vessels. So you were used to somebody telling y'all what to do, Felicia. You ain't never had no problem. You would roll your eyes at me every now and then. Now, don't get me wrong. I used to see you rolling your eyes. But you wouldn't ever say nothing like Sharita. Sharita would talk crazy. Sharita would talk. But what happened was I bought that discipline and that ability to relate to young people to our organization. But let me tell you what, y'all know this is supposed to be about music history, right? Yeah, but let me tell
this
you what.
This is the history of music.
All right. Let me tell you what changed everything. And you all were there when it changed. I asked you all, we had to play at the Gold Bowl, right? And I asked you all, I told the people who lived on Southside, because if Richmond is crazy, for the people that have to come from Blackwell and Oak Grove all the way over to Cool Lane, just it blows your mind. Yeah. You know, and you're saying to yourself, so I'm going like, why would I make you all walk, come from Blackwell to Cool Lane to go back to Union? So I told you all, the people that lived on Southside, take your uniform with you. In the morning, get dressed and meet us at Virginia Union. Now, y'all don't remember this because it was...
I remember that.
But now I don't remember what happened. Somebody raised their hand and said, Mr. McGee, where's Virginia Union? I said, what you mean, where's Virginia Union? And then I asked around the room, I said, how many of y'all in here don't know where Virginia Union is? Right? Now, y'all might all say now you know because of growing up and all the college stuff. But at that time, when people were 14, 15, 16 years old and had not been on the college campus per se, over half the band raised their hand and said they didn't know where Virginia Union was.
Wow. All right?
And you know what happened after that. That's when I started the college trips. I said, oh, I see what the problem is with this group of young people. They've never been in an HBCU environment. Right. They didn't know. See, they didn't know what they were missing. You know, they didn't know what they were missing. And so I said, now I understand my mission. Y'all, it was almost like a light came on that I know that because I had grown up on HBCU campuses in Atlanta. Of course, Atlanta University Center was my home. Right. And I'm going like, college, black colleges? It's like, I grew up on black colleges. And I'm going like, these kids have never been on a black college campus?
No, it tripped me out.
So that first year, Felicia, that first year, that year that I took a group of y'all to Hampton, and that's that picture that I show all the time with Oscarina and Precious. And you know who's in that picture that means so much to me? With Mealy. With Mealy graduated my first year at Kennedy. But With is in that, With, you remember, With played bass drum. Quiet, wore glasses, brown skin.
Yes, I remember that.
And he was in that picture, right? With Mealy graduated from Norfolk State 4 years later.
Wow.
Because he had been exposed, he saw something bigger than Whitcomb Court and bigger than Mosby Court, and he had been exposed to that college campus. And I got that picture of all of you all walking along the fence, and I cherish that picture because it was a symbol of me of, here's God wants you to change lives. And the way you change lives is you expose these kids to music, to tracks. I remember seeing y'all elbow each other because there was all these good looking dudes in the fraternity. And you know how Hampton is. Hampton be flossing. You know what I'm saying? People at Hampton, everybody like the doctors and lawyers in the stands, the ladies with the fur coats on. And I honestly remember many of you all had never seen black folk dressed like that. You know what I'm saying? Because other than folks who go to church regularly, where else would you have been in an environment to see hundreds of black people dressed up real nice? You know what I'm saying? At 14 and 15 years old.
Yeah.
So from that point on, remember, every year we did a college tour. And you all, because you all were a little bit advanced, but for the kids like Bean and Shoshana that came in that first year with me or wherever, If they had stayed with me for 4 years, they ended up going to every HBCU from Morgan State down to Florida A&M. We went to Alabama State. We went to Savannah State. Not Savannah State. We went to all the schools, Bennett, A&T, Elizabeth City. We just went all up and down the Howard. We went all up and down the East Coast for the next 6 years visiting an HBCU school. Wasn't that
that was, that was amazing. Did they give you a hard time? Like, how did you get the funding for that? Like, that's major.
The talent show. The talent show paid for all of that. That's right. So every student had never had to pay more than $50.
Wow.
I made everybody pay at least some money so they'd have some ownership in the experience, right? Mm-hmm. But we figured, hey, a 3-day trip overnight, we're gonna feed you, you're gonna stay at hotels and everything else for $50. Come on.
Wow. That can't be fair.
Right? Go ahead.
I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
So, you know, we know what you gave to us, and we know that you knew music and we loved it. We enjoy getting out there and showing out and having everybody say, oh, John F. Kennedy, you know, blah,
right.
blah. We loved it in the right. parade. Love hearing people hollering at us because they knew that mm-hmm. music was going to be good. One, definitely. Right. Music was right. going to be the drums, Kenny, Milo, Poopoo, they was gonna just tear it, rip it out.
Right? That's right.
And we dancing, and they knew we were a dancing band.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew that I only knew that little bit about you, that little bit about music. I knew you knew your music. I knew you knew how to teach it. But all the other stuff, I did not know that. So what genres of music did you touch? Now I know, you know, jazz, I know R&B. What else? I mean, hip hop. I mean, you would have been in the helping several of our famous ones that came from Kennedy.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the deal. When my mom was teaching at Morris Brown, she being a single woman was able to be the chaperone for the girls whenever the band took a trip, because she had to get permission from no husband to go. So the band director would all there ask her, Miss McGee, can you chaperone the girls? Right. So he said, well, she said, well, you know, I got my, he said, bring them home. You know, so we always went on the trips with the band. In 1965, we went to Florida with Morris Brown's band. Morris Brown was just like what we did at Kennedy. They were just building. I think they had 65 musicians at the time. Florida A&M had hundreds of musicians, right? They were like becoming what bands are today. And Florida A&M was the first band to really step it up. They had a Coca-Cola commercial, a McDonald's commercial or something like that. And what happened was when I got to see them, they were all doing James Brown at the time. Yeah, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, Cold Sweat. James Brown was the hottest thing. He was like Drake is now. James Brown was the man at the time, right? And so I was like 12, 14 years old and looking at them going like, they look like they're having so much fun and they dancing and they playing them horns. And I just got bitten. I got like, I want to do that. Because like you all said about the parades and everything, when you see young people having fun and it's good, clean, organized fun, when them drum majors, they had five drum majors at the time. When all five of them drum majors hit that split and then came back up without even using their hands, I said, Lord have mercy, I got to do that. I said, so I got bitten by funk music, the James Brown and the music of the South, by watching marching bands in Florida A&M in particular, and Morris Brown. Morris Brown gave them a run for their money with their 65 pieces. That's the other thing I loved about what we used to do, even as a smaller band. If you really got your act together, people will represent them. Those kids were good. That they might have been bigger, but that group right there was good too. Because you don't judge somebody necessarily on the size, but you judge them on the effort as based on what they put out. Now, I will tell y'all this because I know we're going to move to some other stuff. I used to always tell, and this is what I loved about teaching in the inner city. And some of y'all had worked with Coach Powell down at Moldby and the Moldby dancers and all of that. What I loved about working in the inner city was the fact that you all could dance, right? And I used to tell people all along, I said, y'all might outplay me, but y'all not going to outdance me. Because my babies can get down. Y'all remember I used to always talk about I can do the funky four corners and I still can get my legs up and I'm 40-something years old. I used to tease y'all, but I used to try to inspire you, you know, to put forth your best effort and to really work hard at what you're doing, because that was the background I come from. So, Felicia, that's pretty much, I grew up playing soul music in Atlanta, and the band that I played with at Morris Brown became the band called Brick. Dad's Disco Jazz. Well, that was the band I played with at Morris Brown. So you hear their music all the time now. We actually signed a recording contract when I was 19 with Ray Charles. And we had two records out back then. But you know, if your record's not a hit, everybody go, oh, that's nice. You know, they'll tell you right now, oh, that's nice. You know. So Felicia, basically my background was soul, R&B, Southern, funky music, Jane. If you listen to Jane Brown stuff with all them horns in there, you go like, yeah, that's what Mr. McGee did when he was growing up.
So I have a question. How did you end up being chosen to be on a Grammy committee? And why y'all ain't get Beyonce record of the year? No, I'm just thinking. How did you get chosen to do that? Because you've been doing that for years.
Well, 15 years. You have to have experience in the in order to be there, you have to have experience in the record industry. You have to have been a recording artist or worked in a record company. What a lot of you all didn't really know at the time, and I had the gold record in my office for a while, but I had earned those two gold records for work.
We didn't know what that was.
Well, but now you talking about, oh yeah.
We didn't know what that was.
Well, I had earned the two gold records, one for Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, and then one for Apache, which is even more famous than Freedom. Apache. That I played on.
That was you, Mr. McGee.
That's me.
We knew that you were somebody. Wow. We just didn't know how much of
you know how much of a somebody. Yes. Yeah, so I played on that. And then somebody else was talking about the fact about Evelyn Champagne King. So we backed Evelyn Champagne King up when she was six. We were her first band, the band that I put together at Virginia State, a group called Trussell. We backed her up. We started our own record label when we were at State. We had our own record store. We were 22, 23 years old, entrepreneurs. Our record store was right in the middle of the hood. You know, all the stuff everybody talks now about giving back to your community and everything. We did that stuff in the 70s. And then we backed Evelyn Champagne King up when Shame first came out. And if anybody want to look at it, if you look on YouTube for Shame 1978, it's a video of all of us, and you'll see me there. I was skinny then. I had on my derby and a black top and white pants. And I had no afro at the time. It was Jerry Curl. We were about Jerry Curl in that, by that time.
Oh, yeah, the Jerry Curl.
No, not on there. I think my hair was short and I had a beard. But later on, the Jerry Curls came and we got all everything all wet. And you know how that was going. But
she looked it up and found it.
Evelyn Champagne King, Shame. And it's 1978. And they do a close up on me in the video and everything. And you'll see that one. Peggy told me I had a greasy
look
curl. Yeah, that, whatever.
She roasted. Whatever. You see that?
I know it. Yeah. Talking trash. But after Evelyn Champagne King, we had our own record out. Now, I like to tell people, I did a thing at the university, I spoke at the university the other night, and they asked and said, what are some of the experiences you had as a musician that you can't forget? Let me tell you this experience. My group, Trussell, from Virginia State University, which was the first group from Virginia State to stay together and have a hit record, even before Guy or other people like that, right? We're riding down Broadway in New York, and we hear our record playing on the radio. So, you know, we all hyped up. You know, WBLS, biggest station in the country, 8 million people listen to them all the time, right? We just hyped up. But then we're listening to the people out in the street who were like sitting out for lunch or doing whatever, and the record wasn't at the same place, right? So we're going like, wait a minute, they're listening to our record, but they're not at the same place where we're listening. So we switched to the other radio station, KISS, and they were playing our record at the same time. So you're riding down Broadway. Excuse me. You're riding down Broadway. Both major stations in New York are playing your record at the same time. And guess what we were going to play? We were on our way to play at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
I mean, you just, you know, it's like really, really hard to share the excitement of a young, yep, that's my group.
Is that you up top?
Yep, with the little headband on. Yep.
Which one are you?
The one all the way at the top.
Right here?
Wow.
On that, yeah, that's me.
That's him. That is him.
Wow.
But imagine
if they had social media back then.
Yep, that's
imagine
me.
If they had social media back then. Go ahead.
That picture was 1973 or 74.
Wow.
That picture's 50 years old.
And it's Trussell.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Love Injection. And our record is still one of the top records, but we were number two in New York City for quite some time. And to be the number two record in New York City means that a whole lot of people were listening to your music at the time. So from there, I worked with the OJs. I played on the OJs album. I played on Patti LaBelle album. I played on Stylistics album. I played with Angie Stone. Angie Stone's group, The Sequence, I played on their album. And I like to tell people right now, the first hip-hop female group was Sequence. It was not Salt-N-Pepa. It was not Roxanne Shantae or any of the other folks. People got to give The Sequence credit for being the first.
Somebody sampled their song.
Bruno Mars had the funk you up thing in his album. But they did the song Funk You Right On Up. We're gonna funk you right on up, right? Mm-hmm. 10 years before Salt-N-Pepa. And one of the girls was Angie Stone.
Wow.
Angie Stone has a child by D'Angelo.
Well, we know that. But
they didn't know. Neither one of them knew. I knew both of them. I knew. I worked with Angie when she was 18. I played on her album, The Sequence album. And then years later, I worked with D'Angelo when he was 18. Right? And it wasn't about a month ago that Angie and I talked. All the Sequence girls and I and Angie were on the phone together. And I explained to her, I said, you know, I knew Michael. And they had never been able to put the connection together that I knew both of them from the music business in two different eras. That's crazy, right?
I want to show
that
this.
That is crazy.
Mr. McGee.
Yeah, that's from the Trussell era.
Look how handsome Mr. McGee was.
What do you mean was?
You used to play that horn. I used to love when you used to play it and kind of teaching them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
When you used to play your horn, kind of teaching them how to do it, how you wanted them to do
it.
You ain't play that often.
No. But so that's pretty much my background, R&B and Evelyn Champagne King. And when SWV did that thing, I remember riding around, that was in Downtown, I think it was, or one of those tunes they did. And every time I turned around, I gotta tell everybody right now.
I'm so into you. Uh-huh.
Is that when you're a session musician like that, you get paid a flat fee, no royalties, none of that residual stuff. We got $75 for the first recording, and no money for SWV recording. So when I used to hear SWVs, and I'd hear myself like over and over again on this, I just shake my head and say, "Lord have mercy." That's the music business for you.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
So I went back and looked at, you know, several people in history, and I want to play a little game.
Okay.
I want to see how many people you were, one, influenced by and what you know about those people, and two, how many you actually play with or that you make, that your music, like you said, you hear when they're playing their music, like they sample right. something that you've already played. Now, I don't know, and I'm just throwing these names out here. Some of them probably too old for you to have done anything with, but they may have influenced you in some kind of way.
Okay.
Right, so sorry, Aretha Franklin. She was soul, right?
Yes, the queen of soul. Aretha Franklin was the queen of soul, 1965, in Jet Magazine back in the day. They used to have a little Jet Magazine chart before everybody. And if they had the top 20 songs in the country, mm-hmm. and Aretha Franklin was the queen of soul. And I did get to hear her live at the Richmond Coliseum, and she was awesome. But to be honest with you, she influences my style a lot. Because Aretha Franklin has this habit of singing late. What I call singing late means is like, because she plays piano, she knows where the music is going before it goes there. So she'll sing and she'll play around with it and then not even sing the part until she gets ready to change the music. And I say to myself, I love, that's her soul style. She anticipates where the music is going. And a lot of people who are not musicians don't understand that she's previewing the next part of the music in the way she sings. But Aretha was the bomb. See, out of Detroit, her daddy was a famous minister too. Go ahead.
Most of the singers came from gospel, from church, from, you know.
Well, if we got a minute, I'm gonna cover why that is. Can I do that real quick now?
Yeah, before we forget. Go ahead.
Yeah, because what I teach my students and what we're working on right now is that in Africa, we celebrated everything with song. We had drums, we had songs for everything. Marriages, funerals, weddings, everything. People having babies, everything had a song. And so our villages and our communities always communicated war. We're going to war, we're going to beat some drums and tell everybody, oh, y'all done messed up now. We're getting ready to fight. When we came to the United States, they took our drums away, all right? So as slaves and as people working in the fields, we started singing. What we sang was the blues. We sang our pain and our agony and our frustration. Everything that we were singing was basically, it wasn't even about Lord yet, because when we're coming in from Africa, a lot of us, many of us were not Christian or didn't have the same language, because we're from different tribes and different parts of Africa. But we still all had the blues. And that's how the blues itself was created, was our pain and our anguish laboring in the fields, the call and response thing that our choirs use right now. The call, when the lead singer sang and everybody answered, that was the way it was even 400 years ago. Somebody would sing a verse, and everybody out in the fields would sing that verse back. It's call and response.
Okay.
What happened was the Black Codes made that even more so when they started locking Black people up and putting them on the chain gang. All right. The chain gang, I was trying to explain to my students, they had never even heard of the chain gang. The chain gang is when you remember the striped suits and they put the ball and the chain on you, breaking rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So the chain gang was an extension of that pain from slavery. Again, that's where the blues was born. We combined the blues with what we call gospel. When we were introduced here, or when people started proselytizing about Christianity, we related to the Israelites and their pain and slavery escaping from Egypt. And so to go down Moses, way down in, you know what I'm saying, in Egypt land, tell Pharaoh, you got to let my people go. That was all of that. That's what we were singing. Oh, we were singing Sweet Low Sweet Chariot coming for to carry me home. Now, a lot of people don't know Swing Low Sweet Chariot was a blues gospel. Well, it was a blues song where they took the gospel lyrics of Swing the Chariot coming to take me home. In literally in the Bible, it talks about taking me home to heaven. What slaves were talking about was taking me to freedom. So when you heard people singing Swing Low Sweet Chariot, it meant that somebody was going to escape that night. Somebody was going, and so that was the coded language. See, that we would be in our houses singing Swing Low Sweet Chariot. That let everybody know that the freedom, that the Harriet Tubman people, the railroad, the Underground Railroad was going to be moving that night. So what happened was, you now you're thinking 1660 to 1800, 1840, 1850. That almost 200 years of bondage, slavery, the blues, and what we consider gospel, right? No recording. Recordings weren't invented then. Recordings weren't invented till the late 1800s, early 1900s. So there's no recordings of that period of time. But what happened is we started recording in the Alexander Graham Bell gets credit for inventing the microphone in 1877. And so if you think about that, this is after the Emancipation Proclamation. So we were free then. We started playing classical instruments. My grandfather, my great-grandfather, it's documented in a book. The McGee family is from North Texas. My great-grandfather is documented in a book in the 1890s as being one of the first black families to own a piano in that city. And I found that in a book recently doing some study on my grandfather. Okay, so once we started playing piano and learning instruments, then ragtime came about. And Scott Joplin, and you start hearing, remember now, they didn't have movie theaters, didn't have talking. They just had pictures and no talk. So they had a piano player playing during the movie. And that's when ragtime, they had to come up with something exciting to play during the exciting scenes and all of that. So when you're tracing the history like that, I wanted to get this music history in, Felicia. When you're tracing the history like that.
I know, you're teaching.
Yeah, so that's when jazz came about. Jazz came right after ragtime. All of that was centered out of New Orleans, all right? New Orleans is the home and birthplace of what we call jazz because they combined the gospel and the blues with the instrumental music, and it became jazz. From there, it spread all the way up the country, north to Kansas City, from North Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas City, to St. Louis, and from there to Chicago. So if anybody wants to look at the history of black music, it starts in New Orleans, and it really blossoms in Chicago, where blues, jazz, and gospel all combine. Just so happened that my grandfather moved to Chicago and became one of the first holiness preachers in Chicago. My grandfather was a Church of God in Christ bishop. And if you ever, anybody wants to know about my grandfather, he was a, check this out. My granddaddy sold more records than I had. My grandfather sold 100,000 copies of a song in the 1920s.
What's his name?
F.W. McGee. Reverend F.W. McGee. I'm W.F. McGee because I have his name Ford. His name is Ford Washington McGee. And he sold more records than I have. And that's crazy because it was 70 years before I was born that my grandfather was making them. So jazz, gospel, blues all came together in Chicago. Right after my grandfather, Thomas Dorsey, wrote Precious Lord that came out in 1931. And Thomas Dorsey was a trained musician and could write his music out. So he actually wrote the music out and started giving it or selling it to other churches. That's why you will find out they say Thomas Dorsey is the father of gospel music, only because he was able to write it out and give it to other churches. So when you listen to Precious Lord and all, that was one of the first gospel songs that all the churches could do, because the recording industry was everybody didn't have a record player, right? Mm-hmm. And radio at the time was mostly live. You know, they were doing live radio shows. They weren't playing records like they do now. So Mahalia Jackson, Thomas Dorsey, and this one lady I want everybody to look up. Her name is Sister Rosetta Tharpe, T-H-A-R-P-E. Sister Rosetta Tharpe is probably one of the most important figures in music that nobody knows about. And guess what? She moved to Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, wow.
She moved to Richmond, Virginia. And guess what else she did? In 1949, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, right, rented the mosque where y'all used to do your talent shows. She rented the mosque for her birthday party and sold it out in 1949.
Wow.
Did they name Rosetta Street after her?
I don't know, but Sister Rosetta Tharpe, she bought a house here in Richmond, and she became friends of the Harmonizing Four. That's how she ended up getting here. So the Harmonizing Four is a famous Richmond gospel group. And they're one of the sons of the Harmonizing Four was Lonnie Liston Smith, who's a famous jazz pianist from Richmond. And I could go through the list of history. Y'all didn't give me enough time.
Listen, I'm going to ask you a question.
I know.
My grandfather was also in a band. His name was George Vereen. He was in the Highlighters. I don't know if you
have that. Okay. I know the name of the Highlighters.
That's him. George.
Okay.
Right here.
Okay. Where were they playing at? Where did they say they were playing?
They were... at this particular time, they were in, I believe this was in Chicago.
Was he from Richmond?
He was from South Carolina. There was
what
from,
part?
Merle's Inlet, Myrtle okay. Beach.
Okay.
That's where
yeah. Yep. are. Oh, down there with the Geechies. You know anything about Geechies?
Absolutely.
You know anything about Geechies? Sharita?
I don't know about the Geechee.
Okay. Well, Felicia can tell you.
I don't.
It's, Geechee is a pejorative name in a way, but it's really a part of that African history. Those are the Africans who had the legacy of having escaped from slavery early on in the history. And many, the Gullah Island people and all those people in Jacksonville and Gullah. In Jacksonville, all the way up the East Coast, when escaped slaves got away, they lived in the swamp area along the coastline, what she said, like Myrtle Beach and all the way down Georgia and Savannah and all of that. And those escaped slaves, a lot of them were much darker because they had never been mated with white people, right? So that was one of the, and plus their language was very much close to a combination like Creole or a combination of African and English and Indian, I mean, and Native American, because these people were closest to the escaped Africans that you could find here in this country. Mm-hmm. So Vereen.
Wow, I'm looking up your
full community right here, about 45, well, actually here in Savannah as well.
Sure.
Area, and like I said, Merle's Inlet, where my family.
Right. The first Geechees I met at Morris Brown were from Savannah. They were from that part of the coast. And again, we use that term pejoratively, meaning it's almost like an insult. But I don't know what else to call them other than people who had that history of escaped slaves and never were mated and merged with, never assimilated into the European bloodline. In other words, you know what I'm saying? So they were closest to their African DNA than anybody else. And that's why when you run across those people down in Savannah, Felicia, you'll find, you know, they all got that DNA history. You probably do an ancestor thing on them and they'll be saying Africa, 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 you know.
But they prefer to be called Gullah.
Gullah people, right. The Gullah Island people, right. Right.
Okay, Felicia.
So, Felicia, yeah. I got a niece that's down in Savannah. I need to hook y'all up. Yeah. She's at Savannah State.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I hooked my niece up with you. See if y'all can, you know, you can help her school her and everything else and do that. And we're running out of time, aren't we?
But we
we run out of time.
I wanted to ask you one more question.
Okay.
This has been amazing.
I want to ask you one more question.
Okay.
And we can go. I want to ask you how you think everybody that you've talked about, all the way from the slaves and how they sung and brought their music here, and
right.
And you know, all the different music, blues, gospel, jazz, R&B, soul, hip hop, and one of my favorite, go-go music.
Yep.
How is it all influenced, and are you proud of our hip hop culture? It's all mixed up now. So you can be listening to a rapper and you'll hear blues, jazz, all kinds of stuff in there.
Right, influences. Right. Well, let me share with you what I share with my class. And you're right about hip hop. About go-go. I talked about go-go in class the other day, and I shared with the class, I said, you know, go-go is the closest to African music, straight up African music that we've created here in the United States. And the craziest part is it never caught on outside of the DC area, but it is straight up and out African music, because y'all know the minute you start hearing that go-go, everybody starts rocking. It's just, it's tribal music. It's truly tribal music. And I never understood why go-go never picked up in other parts of the country. But let me explain to you real quick with the time we have. Music is always based on technology. All right? So they took away the drums. We used our voice. When they allowed us to play the piano, we created ragtime. We did create banjos. And because we had banjos in Africa, we had instruments that were made out of gourds and strings. So we created a lot of the instruments ourselves, but they wouldn't let us have drums, because the drums, number one, was how we communicated, and they scared them people, because they knew that if we could communicate with drums, then they were in trouble, because we could send messages to each other. So they took away the drums and they made sure so we ended up playing piano. We ended up playing guitar. Rosetta Tharpe, the reason I said to you all what I said is, she's not only one of the founders of gospel, but she's the mother of rock and roll. A lot of people don't, she's unsung. Came here, lived in Richmond. Mm. She is truly the mother of rock and roll, because she played guitar and mandolin in the holiness churches. But when they got the electric guitar, her approach to guitar was different than the blues player, because she was playing gospel music. So she was playing church. Yes, that's Sister Rosetta Tharpe. She was playing gospel music on her guitar. And the stuff that she was playing, the white boys that played guitar were going like, what is that? So if you look at her history, you look at her Wikipedia page, you'll find out that Rosetta Tharpe is the mother of rock and roll before Chuck Berry, Muddy Waters, all those guys. Rosetta Tharpe in the 30s was playing that rock and roll guitar. That's the woman I wanted you to make sure you include on your history when you do the women thing coming up. Okay. Don't leave Rosetta Tharpe out, all right? Okay, now, to answer your other question, the technology is what changed everything, all right? So when we were doing the Sugar Hill stuff, all that first rap music was played with live instruments. One day the keyboard players came in playing the synthesizer, and the synthesizer they had played more than one note. And I turned to the guys and I said, y'all, we just got fired, because they had keyboards that could do what we did, then the drummer was using the drum machine. Right? And that technology, so when you listen to all that, the Deal and all of that Teddy Riley stuff and all that stuff y'all grew up with, all based on the technology. All that technology changed the music. Music kept changing. Right now, auto-tune is what's, everybody got to have auto-tune on their voice, and it makes no sense. But here's what's happening. They're coming back to using real instruments in music. They're coming back to using real. You saw her the other night playing on the guitar and stuff. Mm-hmm. You hear Bruno Mars. You hear people like that. They're coming back to playing real instruments on the music. I asked all of my students to play me their favorite songs or tell me what their favorite songs are so I can hear what the young people are doing, right? And I always ask them about drill and trap, and I try to stay up with the Migos and, mm-hmm. and the Waka Flocka and I, you know, I stay up with, what? Y'all know who I am. I'm like, hey, I'm a young person in an old person body. That's all I can say. So, yes. But it's the technology that has changed now. They're not using as much the electronic instruments as they're starting to use the same instruments I use in jazz and everything. They're still doing the turntable thing, but you would be surprised as how the music is coming back together and the hip hop and stuff is coming back to using real musical instruments. And so the halftime, the halftime show, I made my, I had all my students look at the halftime show and critique it on class on Monday and Tuesday. So we looked at the whole halftime show with Usher and I asked for critiques. And I said, what did you like about it? What did you not like about it? You know, it was very interesting to hear what they had to say. A lot of them had some good things to say. They were getting on Alicia Keys for missing the note at the beginning of the song.
Yeah, she definitely missed that note. It happens, though.
That didn't bother me because the girl was looking good. So what can I say? But other than that, I love her on her guitar part that she did.
She was
awesome. And she's an awesome artist. Yeah. I love me her. I love a lot of other. Daniel Caesar. I love him. I love Algebra. Mm-hmm. I love Avery Sunshine, mm-hmm. Indiree.
Yeah, Indiree, one of my
favorites. Tony Hardy worked with, I think, Indiree, believe it or not, out in California. Yeah, oh. Tony has been doing really well out there. You know, one of y'all's classmates.
Really?
Oh, Tony, you know he got his doctorate too. That's he's cool. Dr. Tony Hardy.
Don't doctor.
Or music or ministry or something like that.
Well,
got he got his master's from Virginia State. Yeah. His bachelor's
I have to come in by Virginia State.
Come on by and see me. I'm there every morning.
I know they said the halftime show was he had the glove on for Michael Jackson.
Yes. I saw him on him.
On the throwback to Prince.
Prince, right.
He had the marching band there.
Jackson State's marching band.
Marching band. He had skaters from ATL. He had the strippers. Yeah. I mean, he had something that was a throwback to everybody. And what I loved about it was Black History. And
yeah.
It was Black History Month. And he just took us all the way to the A at halftime. You can't do
that. Yeah.
Usher is
a legend. He's a legend. I love Usher.
For 45 years old, you can't beat it either. For them abs and that,
no.
I tell all my friends, I say, y'all 25 don't look that good, so I don't care what you say. If boy is 45 years old and can take his shirt off in front of a crowd and not have a gut. So
well, I want to thank you. We were teenagers. We just wanted to have fun and dance and listen to music and impress our friends and all that. And we really didn't know what we had.
Well, that's all right. God puts people in places for a reason.
But we knew we had a mentor. We had, some of us had a daddy. Some of us had somebody who would keep us out of trouble. We knew we had that. But we didn't know the brilliance of what we had. So I appreciate you. Like, seriously, we learned about you as time went on.
Me too.
and we talk about you. I talk about you all the time, you know, because look, I'm proud of that little band in Churchill at JFK that everybody kind of poo-pooed on sometimes. But when we came out, they knew we was there. We had on our shorts and t-shirts and jackets at first. And
do I have a minute to say something? Can I have a minute?
Yes.
We were, you know how we used to, I was telling people this story the other day. You know how we used to, if we had a parade, what would I do if we had a parade? I'd make y'all march through Fairfield Court. Remember that? We'd go out and we'd march and practice. We'd practice marching through Fairfield, right? And I was telling everybody, I said, what it did was it made you all have a sense of pride, but it also influenced the community to have a sense of pride in you all. And it influenced the young people to want to be like you when they grew up. So all them little kids that love a marching band was all, you know, that whole thing was a psychological thing, which is to make you feel good about yourself because y'all stepped higher when you had an audience. We could have practiced out there in the field all back and forth. But I said, no, we're going out. I said, Precious, Ken, let's go. And we go out to Fairfield. But look, here's the story. I have people don't know this. One time we went out, I don't know if it was with y'all's era or the era that came behind, but everybody was marching down Fop Street or one of them streets. And the band started doing a little curve to the right, or to the left. And I'm going like, what are they doing? Right? I'm behind y'all complaining. Y'all pick up your feet. Stop doing, you know, all my little gripes, right? And keeping the drummers from doing dumb stuff. So the band was veering to the right. There was a dude standing right there on the grass in Fairfield Court with a gun. Okay? He was standing there with his gun like that. Yeah! Y'all, he's like, right? And the band was like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And they just went around and then they got right back in line and went on down there. And I tell people, I said, y'all don't understand how teaching kids in the hood, and we had to go through stuff like that. So when we got back to school, everybody was joking about, you know, that was your cousin. That was your cousin, baby, standing out there with the gun. We had a ball laughing at stuff like that. And I wouldn't give anything in this world for my experience of having worked with you all, because I figured that, like I said, God ordered my steps. I needed to be there because there was a group of kids like you all that needed structure. You needed somebody to make sure that y'all stayed between the lines. It kept y'all busy after school, so y'all wouldn't be getting in trouble and doing whatever teenagers do when they ain't got a lot of time on their hands. And for that reason, look at you all. People just don't understand how proud of all my babies I am. Because y'all were, when I see the people talking about I'm 50 years old and all that stuff, I said, y'all were 14 when I met you. You were 15 years old.
Yes.
And now you all are successful. I won't say how old you are. You're all successful young people, right? Parents and grandparents. And I just feel like I had a whole bunch of children and all of them did well.
You did.
So I thank you all.
But let me say this. Now that story might have been your younger you. After us that walked right. around with the gun. But I do remember you getting the football team in trouble. They got a fine. Because you had us come marching out the woods and everybody was looking for us and they stopped the game because they didn't know which way we was coming from. Do y'all remember that?
Was that Huguenot?
Yeah,
because you had to come down the little woods and the steps to Huguenot. Yeah, well, whatever. Look, they didn't win. Mr. Coach James and them are still good friends of mine. But them suckers didn't win. What? The whole time we were there, they might have won game. Two. Two games in 5 years, maybe.
Armstrong or where? We couldn't beat the county school.
They came to see us. They came.
And we were the show. That's all we knew. Everywhere we went, we were the show because I had young folk who were disciplined and having fun. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying is, I think that's the one thing that's missing right now is disciplined fun. You can, I didn't care what y'all did as long as y'all kept it clean. You know what I'm saying? As long as y'all were hype. I'm just like, I can't stand no dry kids. Y'all know, y'all not hype enough for me. That's like, you know, but you got to keep it clean. There ain't none of that booty shaking stuff. Y'all know I ain't play that. But I really, really encourage you all to be very enthusiastic about what you were doing, because the parents and the spectators would see y'all and say, they are having so much fun.
We had so much fun.
We did. We had a lot of fun. And we appreciate you, man. You almost make me want to You make me want to tear up, because seriously,
I know.
I appreciate you. You gave us something to look forward to. Something.
Well, our college tour is what more people need to do if they want to change a lot of outlooks right now. If in anybody listening, take these kids to a HBCU campus. Take them to somewhere where they can see people that look like them walking. When we went to Morehouse and we went to Spelman, I remember y'all looking at the guys, and I don't know if it was your group or whatever, but I know we went to Morehouse twice while we were doing the tour. And the girls would just look at these guys going with book bags and briefcases. And it was almost like a whole different, like, I didn't even know black men was carrying it like that. Because the brothers that they were seeing were standing on the corner trying to hustle, right? And then you got all these guys who are on a mission to be something in life. And it's almost like I saw, when we went to Spelman once, again, I don't know if it was your group, I introduced them to a young lady, and she was 18 from Philadelphia. And I said, well, where are you from and what are you doing? And I want you to talk to my girls. She said, well, I want to be an author. And she says, I started writing my book in the 10th grade, and every time I wrote a chapter, I would send it to Spelman. She said, by the time I got to be a senior, they had already accepted me and given me a scholarship, because she wanted to be an author and a journalist. You can't buy that kind of motivation for young people. To hear an 18-year-old that looks like you, that's already got their focus together as to what they want to be, and she's talking to high school kids who are trying to decide, what am I going to be in my life? You know, what am I going to do? And here's a young lady who is looking just like them that already knew what her path would be. Those are the kind of motivation things that I was so thankful for, because it paid off with all of you all. You know what I'm saying? You all had dreams, and Sharita and Virginia State, Norfolk State, I mean, just think, we went to all those schools to visit so that you could see what that HBCU college life would be like, right? And it just, I think it really made a difference. I really do.
It definitely made a difference.
And we thank you for being on here and accepting. And this was last minute. This was very last minute, you know. Yeah. We're creative at the last minute. We come up with all kinds of things, and you jump right on and say, yeah, I'll do it. Let me know when. So I appreciate you for that. And I want you to know, along with everybody else in the comments, and you saw people at the reunion when we just had it last year, that people absolutely love you and absolutely appreciate what you do for us. So I'm going to give you this applause.
We
appreciate what you do with us. And it you know, at the time we may not have known what we had, but now we do, and we definitely talk about you all the time. And you were the first person that I thought about when we talked about Black history and music. So thank you.
Well, we'll have to continue this, because there's a lot of music history with D'Angelo and Mad Skills and the Super Friends and all of it. We just left out a whole era of people who came out. Mike Street is doing fantastic things, and he was in the first talent show. And it's just so many. I just telling people, y'all don't know how proud of you all I am. I tell Mike Street all of that all the time. I just tell him, say, man, I'm just so proud of you. Ken Rohn, lieutenant in the police department. Just so proud. Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so proud of all of you all so much. So.
I said, yeah, Ken doing a thing.
Yeah. Huh? Absolutely. He's just, yeah, Ken is.
I said, we appreciate you, and you played an intricate part.
Well, thank you.
Yes, listen, We have had Mr. Bill McGee, the legend. What's the nickname? Dollar Bill.
Dollar Bill. Dollar Bill.
Bill. And we definitely
Dollar Bill. He is a legend.
Next Tuesday, we're gonna continue this Black History Road. We are going to have Lady Champagne on out of Dallas, Texas. We're gonna see how the history of Lindy Hop and Swing Out, the history of dance. She's gonna show us how to do the Swing Out.
Wow.
Which is a big thing.
Yeah,
in South Carolina and some of these areas. And it's a little different than stepping. But it's something that they used to, Lindy Hop used to do back in the day. So she gonna show us, and Miss Lady Champagne ain't nothing to play with. She's a little feisty. We will see her next week. Anything you have, Maria?
No, this is awesome. I really appreciate you coming on and spending your time with us. But we will invite you back for part two.
Definitely. Okay. That. And for those of you who are listening, our last episode in this series is going to be about iconic women in Black history. If you have anybody that you want, and it's not just history, for me, history is living today. So if it's somebody that you think that we should highlight, by all means, send us a message and a little bit of their information, and we will highlight them. We love, love, love our culture, and we want to put it on display.
Right? When is that last meeting?
It is February 27th.
Okay. What is that, Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because my meeting, my SCLC meeting, is the 29th. And it, ironically, I'm having or trying to have Reverend Y.T. Walker's wife and family on. Reverend Y.T. Walker finished Virginia Union and ended up as a pastor at Guildfield in Petersburg before Martin Luther King hired him to be his executive director. So he was with Martin Luther King early on through all of the 60s and everything else. He ended up being a pastor Abyssinian in New York. But his wife is 95 years old.
Oh, wow.
She's one of the few living people from that era. And we're going to try to have her on. So I'll send you all that link so you can share it. Because if your meet's that Tuesday, maybe they'll come to ISCLC meeting and listen to us talk about Reverend Y.T. Walker's wife, who, of course, was with Coretta Scott King and all of them.
Nice.
During the civil rights movement in Atlanta.
Yeah, okay. Send it to us. We'll definitely,
Send it to us.
I'll definitely come. It's all right, time.
Awesome.
It's time. We haven't been sitting back, but we need to stand up some more. You know, I'm proud. I'm proud to be a Black woman. I'm proud of my ancestors.
Me too.
We need to put it on display. Keep it on display.
Well, I'm proud of you all. You know that.
They think they gave
us. Well, we're proud. All right, so let me enjoy my last night in Vegas. Thank you so much, Mr. McGee. I appreciate you. We love you.
I'm going like Vegas. Go ahead, girl. See, I'm just talking about when I see y'all traveling like you do, and I see Felicia traveling all over, and I see you. And then Tanika is all halfway around the world.
Always around the world.
Yeah. And I'm going like, y'all people don't know that these Peggy, I see you traveling from Chesterfield to wherever. Let me stop because I know she's going to get me for that. I am just so proud of you all. Nobody went to St. Paul's, John Kennedy.
Wait a minute, what about this part? Let's get paid.
There you go, let's get paid.
And we all like, just got paid.
So I'm so proud of you all just to see, it could have turned out different. That's what I want everybody to understand. You all grew up during the crack era. And y'all grew up when there were a lot of opportunities to do the wrong thing. And it could have turned out totally different. But so many of you all, I would say the majority of you all turned out to be fantastic professionals doing traveling. I'm just so proud of you. And a lot of people don't know it could have been different. It really could have been. We got a few folks. Few folks that didn't make it. And I think in particular of a couple of people that went to Norfolk State that graduated from Kennedy that just didn't make it, you know. And so for that reason, you know, I'm so proud of y'all. Thank you all for having me. Y'all got to sign me out or I'll keep talking.
You good. We appreciate you, like I said. And it's all good. You are welcome back here.
Definitely. We want part two.
All right. Well, we got a part two.
Oh, and we have something else to tell you. Red and I are going to be on radio. You remember Malcolm?
Awesome.
Malcolm Ennis he graduated a year before us. He has a radio station out there in Miss Lou,
Mississippi. That's right.
We're going to be on his AM station.
Mississippi. And he put in Natchez, I think it is.
Yeah.
And Malcolm plays my music. And he came here and, well, that's right. Y'all saw him at the reunion and everything. But Malcolm and I had been talking even before then. And he supported me even when he was in Houston. He did all he could to help and support my music. And I am so proud of him. Malcolm is one of those stories that I make, that I tell him just touches my heart. Malcolm didn't know how to play an instrument. All right. He didn't know how to play an instrument. But he came to me and said he was willing to learn. So I gave him a tuba and told Sean and Kiowa to teach him how to play. All right. He never played an instrument before a day in his life. And I gave him a tuba and said, Sean and Kiowa, teach Malcolm how to play. When I saw Malcolm marching in the Howard University band playing tuba, it just touched my heart. I mean, how do you just go from winning Mr. Kennedy that year? Because no female would, I guess the GPAs were kind of whack. And he ended up being the king, the Kennedy king. And then he went to Howard. Then he started working at WHUR radio station.
Wow.
All right. So I am still so, you know, Malcolm is one of them stories I tell about how just all you got to do is be willing. Just be willing. And willing to work hard and have structure. And Malcolm was willing to put up with our structure. And he worked hard, learned how to play the tuba in 1 year. And played tuba in college at Howard University.
And we're going to be on The Buzz of Nashville. We're doing it. We helping out each other.
That's right.
Helping us out, he propelling us onto the radio. We're on live Facebook, YouTube, and we're also on Podbean for those of you who would like to take us with you. We're on Podbean, Spotify, we're on all of your podcasting platforms. Look, Red and Fee, y'all better watch out for us.
We trying to retire early.
Okay, I'm gonna leave that one alone. I get in trouble. I know what at age you can get an AARP card, so I'm gonna leave that alone.
All right, we said we love to see y'all.
Get me the discounts, I'll take the discount.
Okay, all
right. I know that's right.
I'm loving it, and I always got a display.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, my mama. My mama was one of them people. You know, my mother plays at South Carolina State.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right, y'all. We could talk all night long, but we're gonna go ahead and let y'all go. All right. Love y'all.
Thank you, Miss Lou, for tuning in to 1240 AM The Buzz. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram and Inspire Her, the Total Woman. See you next week.
We are here to inspire her, the Total Woman.
Yay!